Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The latest polls have him down by 15 percentage points. The latest campaign finance reports have him down by more than $9 million. And many Ohioans still have never heard of Ed Fitzgerald, the Democratic challenger to Republican incumbent John Kasich. Here's the thumbnail. He's married, the father of four children, two of whom are in college. He's a former FBI agent, a former prosecutor, a former Lakewood, Ohio mayor, and currently the Cuyahoga County executive. He is with us in the studio today. Ed Fitzgerald, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
You have proposed 11 debates with incumbent Governor John Kasich. That's a lot of debates by any measure, unless you're running in a national Republican primary, I suppose. But
I'm not. He might be trying to, but I'm not.
But it's a classic tactic of a challenger. The proposal was called a stunt by one reporter, and lots of people ignore the debates anyways these days. What's the point?
Well, I can tell you, when I have run for other offices, for instance, when I ran for a county office in my county, which is about 10% population-wise of the state of Ohio, we had a lot more forums than that. And one of the things you learn about Ohio as you travel the state is that there are statewide issues, that's certainly true, but there are also issues that are particular to a certain part of Ohio. So, for instance, the Valley area, the Youngstown area, they have issues that they want to talk about that are particular to them. The Toledo area, they have issues that they want to talk about. And so we've gotten requests from all those areas, and I think they have a right to be heard. If the governor doesn't want to do them, that's fine. But I'm going to be in those areas, and I think it makes sense. And I assume at some point he's going to be in those areas, and it makes sense for us to give people an opportunity not just to talk about the big statewide issues, but also some issues that are particularly compelling to their part of Ohio.
Ohio's jobless rate dropped again, as continues to drop, but you've said that the numbers of reported jobless aren't telling the whole story. If you are elected governor, what numbers would you want people to look at as they measure your successes or failures on that regard?
Sure. Well, how about the number of people in Ohio, for instance, that are living paycheck to paycheck, which by a lot of estimates is about 50% of the state? How about the number of people that are trying to make it making a minimum wage? You know, about 10% of the state earns a minimum wage. If you're going to talk about the unemployment rate, let's talk about how many people have dropped out of the labor market in the first place, which is an enormous number. I mean, we've had months, Ann, where the unemployment rate, quote unquote, goes down at the same time that we only create 600 jobs in a state of 11 million people. Who are we kidding with that? So the unemployment rate, unfortunately, has become not necessarily the greatest measure of how the average family is actually making it or not making it in Ohio.
But if the unemployment rate wasn't increasing, if the unemployment rate was tanking as it was 4 and 5 years ago, wouldn't you be using that against Governor Kasich?
The unemployment rate can be a measure. The question is whether it is the measure. Look, here's a perfectly, I think, reasonable context to put that in. Are we creating jobs at a faster rate than the national average or a slower rate? And the answer to that is a slower rate. The last survey that came out had us, I think, around 36th or 38th in the country in terms of job creation. Have we added back the jobs that we lost during the recession? Because there are states in this country that have added back all the jobs that they lost during the recession and then some. Well, we haven't. As a matter of fact, we're nowhere close to it. Now, the country has as a whole, but we're trailing the rest of the country. So I wouldn't suggest that the unemployment rate is entirely irrelevant, but you have to put it in the context of how is the average working person doing. You also need to look at what kind of wage are they making. Because if I was unemployed during the recession and I made $25 an hour, and now I've been rehired, it may show that the unemployment rate went down for me, but what if I got rehired, now I'm making $8.50 an hour? So we have to just look at how the average person is actually making it or not making it in this state.
My guest is Ed Fitzgerald. He is the Cuyahoga County executive. He's also the Democratic nominee for governor in Ohio. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. There has been a lot of criticism of Governor Kasich's jobs in Ohio for its lack of transparency, among other things. If you're elected governor, what would you do with Jobs Ohio as it stands? That's his, of course, private jobs creation agency that he credits for a lot of whatever successes you want to give them?
Yeah, real simple. Open the books. I mean, just open the books. The whole idea that this should be a privatized, secret, black box agency is a crazy concept. And it is, that's not a Democratic issue or Republican issue. That is basic good government. You take hundreds of millions and at some point over $1 billion, and you put it into a fund that is essentially a secret fund in many, many ways, you are just asking for trouble. You're asking for conflicts of interest. You're eventually asking for illegal activity to happen. You just don't do that with public money. It's insanity that they're doing that. I thought it was one of the worst things I've ever seen in the history of state government, that they literally passed a law to take the right away from the state auditor to audit the books of Jobs Ohio in an open fashion. It's nuts.
And Fitzgerald, that was the Ohio General Assembly that passed that law. Governor Kasich signed it into law. The Ohio General Assembly is dominated by conservative Republicans in both chambers. How would you get your issues heard, let alone taken seriously, in an environment like that that's not likely to change any, if at all?
Well, first of all, when you say they passed it, he signed it.
He did.
I don't think they did it spontaneously. That was his proposal. And he certainly has defended the secrecy of that agency, and he certainly is the person behind the scenes that's making the board appointments and directing it.
Yeah, but they haven't carried the torch for everything he's proposed, as we all know.
No, but we're talking about secrecy. He has completely embraced, he has said that the secrecy of Jobs Ohio is essential to its operation. And so he owns that 100%. They haven't done everything that he wanted, but in that area, they certainly did. And he certainly was the driver behind making it a secretive organization. Now, in terms of legislature, we don't know what the legislature, the composition of the legislature is going to be after this fall's election. I hope it will be a legislature I can work with. I've worked with legislative bodies before as a mayor and as a county official. I've had proposals that have gotten Democratic and Republican support. And I'll sit down with leaders of the legislature exist in January of next year, and we'll talk about what do we agree on, what do we disagree on, and where can we move the state forward. That's the way the process works.
Coming up later today, you're going to announce some proposals for clean and renewable energy in Ohio. Another law that Governor Kasich signed recently has to do with a freeze on renewable energy requirements for utilities, among many other things. Actually, what do you make of Senate or House Bill 310, and what is your proposal about today?
Well, I thought Senate Bill 310 was a disaster. I thought it sent a very powerful message to the clean and renewable energy industry, which is responsible for, it's been estimated, up to 25,000 jobs in Ohio with the potential of thousands more. And it sent them a very powerful message, which was, we do not want your business in this state, and that this is not going to be friendly territory for them. I mean, it was heartbreaking to me to see CEOs of companies that want to make investment in Ohio say, you know, we've just been sent a message that Ohio doesn't want us anymore. And I thought it was really the most significant step backwards that any state has taken. So the first thing that a new governor has to do is sit down with all those folks and say, look, we actually do want you here in the state. We want to create a friendly and welcoming environment for those types of investments. And then there's various policies that I'm going to be talking about later today about how we do that. I think Senate Bill 310 should be repealed. I think House Bill 483, which was the wind turbine setback rule, which, by the way, would have, if it had been in place, would have made almost impossible the largest single wind farm investment that we have out in the western part of the state, would have made it impossible if it was largely impossible if it had been in effect at the time.
Setback being that they can't be constructed within a certain distance housing.
That's right. And the estimate is for the biggest wind farm that we have in Ohio, that would have made most of those wind turbines impossible to build. So it's not just a property issue for the farmers and landowners that wanted that on their property. It undercuts the whole industry in the state. So the manufacturing process, the construction, the design of the turbines, all of that has been affected by that legislation.
Governor Kasich's done a lot for Ohio's poor, not the least of which was bucking the conservative Republican and Tea Party establishment by orchestrating an expansion of Medicaid in Ohio. He's also boosted funding for people who are mentally ill, for people who are drug addicted. How do his inroads in those constituencies affect your message to them?
Well, I disagree a bit with your premise because there have been a number of things that have been done that I think have been very harmful to the poor. I mean, we have a tax system that has been implemented in the last few years where if you're making $350,000 a year, you got an enormous tax cut. You may have gotten a tax cut, income tax cut by as much as $6,000. How was that financed? That was financed in part by cutting the local government fund by 50%. Those cuts affected the poor. I mean, I can tell you in my county, and we have the largest county budget in the state, that hit our social services, Ann, including services for the poor. It was also financed by cutting K-12 education. Who did that hit? That also hit the poor. It was also something where it was financed by raising sales taxes. Who did that hit? That also hit the poor. So it's been a very mixed record. I agreed with the governor about Medicaid expansion. And there are other things that the governor has done that I think are appropriate. But overall, you've had a shift where the wealthiest people in the state have really gotten what they asked for, and a lot of other people have been left still waiting.
You've been critical already of the U.S. Supreme Court decision in the Hobby Lobby case, which gave Hobby Lobby and companies like it the right to deny certain birth control coverage in their health insurance plans. You also have criticized Governor Kasich for signing into law a new set of restrictions that make it more difficult for family planning groups to receive funding for preventive care, require ultrasounds for anyone seeking an abortion, and limit abortion providers' ability to get transfer agreements with public hospitals. Is this an issue that you would turn to if you were elected governor to change and turn back the tide?
Well, I think these policies have been consistently anti-woman, and we are seeing that at the federal level, and we're seeing it at the local level. With the situation with Hobby Lobby, I think that a woman's access to birth control ought to be something that her boss cannot turn on and off. I think that's wrong, and most people in America think it's wrong. I don't know if Governor Kasich has said anything about it. I think he'll probably hide on the issue, is my guess. Maybe he has said something about it. In the state, there were certain things that were passed as part of a budget bill, which, first of all, I think was entirely inappropriate to take these women's health care issues, tuck them into a budget bill, have no real discussion or debate about it, certainly not a full and fair debate about it, and then say, well, this is part of the budget, sign it into law, and basically take no questions about it and say nothing about it. And I think a lot of those things were really regressive. And there's some things in there that I'm convinced that most people in Ohio still aren't aware of. For instance, now it is part of Ohio law that if a rape crisis center gets state funding, they can't have a discussion with a victim of sexual assault about all their health care options, or they will endanger their state funding.
Meaning including abortion.
That's right. All of their options. And I can tell you, as somebody, I used to be a prosecutor, and I used to work with the victims of sexual assault. And I also worked with folks that were volunteers or staff at rape crisis clinics. To have some politician like John Kasich or people in the legislature to come in and say, well, we're going to tell you what you can talk to them about and what you can't talk to them about, or otherwise you're going to endanger your funding, I think is obscene.
My guest is Ed Fitzgerald. He's the Democratic nominee for governor of the state of Ohio. We are taking questions, 614-292-8513. We'll return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Ed Fitzgerald. He's a Democratic nominee for governor. By 2019, the state prison population is expected to climb to 53,484 inmates, or 139% above what the prison system was designed to accommodate. How does this issue rank for you in general? And if you deem it a problem, what would you do to turn the tide?
I think it's very important. Look, we have thousands and thousands of folks coming out of the prison system every single year, going back into our local communities. And we've got to figure out a way to make sure that they get reintegrated into our economy. The whole idea that you can lock people up and throw away the key, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work economically. It's not the right thing to do ethically, I don't think. One of the things I've done in my county is put additional resources into reentry programs. And they're some of the most effective programs that are out there. If you have an effective reentry program, when somebody comes out of prison in the first place, their recidivism, their reoffending rate will go from sometimes in excess of 50% down to single digits. So that's an important investment that my county has made. I think the state can do more of that. I do agree with some of the things that the state has done in terms of making sure that nonviolent drug offenders don't end up taking up jail space. I disagree with some things. For instance, I think the governor's move to privatize prisons and basically put private for-profit corporations in charge of part of our prison system is a bad idea. I don't think they have an incentive to keep people out of prison. I think they have an incentive to make sure that people come back into prison. I think it's a bad idea, and I don't think it's worked out well.
There are new laws and old laws that affect prison sentencing and parole. Mm-hmm. Many inmates live and work alongside fellow inmates who have committed the same or more serious crimes but are getting out sooner. What about those old and new laws and how they affect inmates so much differently now?
Well, I mean, that's certainly a relevant issue, but the law is always changing. And if you're sentenced under, I can just tell you, I was in law enforcement for 8 years, mm-hmm. and I still participate in law enforcement at the county level in terms of working with our county sheriff's department. There's always some inequities with somebody that's been sentenced under one law, and then if the law changes. And I think we can look at some of those things, and I think I don't necessarily object to judges having the latitude to look at whether or not society's view about what an appropriate punishment is has changed over time.
Once again, my guest is Ed Fitzgerald. He's a Democratic nominee for governor. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Don in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Don. Turn off your radio.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
You got to turn down your radio.
Okay. I've got it on speakerphone. I'm sorry.
Yep. You got to turn that off then.
Okay. I don't know if I can, but just really quick.
Okay.
Will they legalize medical marijuana?
Okay. Thanks a lot, Don.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm looking at it. I haven't made a decision about it. I'm being very thoughtful and methodical about it. You know, one of the things about having 50 states is we have an opportunity to look at the way different policies are working. I know there are states that have done that. I'm looking at it, and I do think there's some public health implications to that, so I'm not glib about it. I don't want to do it because I see it as an opportunity for the state to make money off of it. If I'm going to be in favor of it, it's going to be because I think it makes good public health policy, and I'm going to make an announcement on it later this year.
What about recreational marijuana?
Same thing.
Okay, and Sam in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sam. Hello, Sam. Sam?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Yes, hi. Yes, I will be reading in the on Dispatch that WED has proposed a new $2 billion spending, but he hasn't told us how he's going to pay for it. Is he going to raise taxes? Or how is he going to find that $2 billion?
This is for pre-K, right?
Oh. Yes.
Okay.
Well, I just say to the caller, you know, the tip-off might have been the beginning of your question, because the Dispatch, to be quite frank with you, is enormously biased and unfair in their coverage. I've never seen anything like it in terms of a major paper, and I don't have any qualms about saying that. We have talked about spending some additional money, particularly in the area of early childhood education. Now, that has a price tag of just the early childhood education portion of it has a price tag of about $500 million per year. We're talking about a budget that's over $60 billion. And what I have a record of doing, both as a mayor and as a county official, is making government more efficient and prioritizing my programs without, and actually fulfilling them without raising taxes. And I've done that repeatedly. Now, you compare that to Governor Kasich, who campaigned back in 2010 that he was going to cut income taxes, never disclosed how he was going to pay for it. And then, as we all know now, he actually did it by taking money away from local schools and cities, which drove up local property taxes. He also did it by raising a number of other taxes, taking away the homestead exemption for some seniors, raising sales taxes, trying to expand sales taxes, raising taxes on oil and gas. I have a record of running for office, not running on a platform to raise taxes, which I'm not doing in this election either. And I have a record of making wise investments by making government more efficient. And that's one of the big differences between Governor Kasich and myself. And it's one of the reasons I think I'm more fiscally responsible in the way that I approach funding government than Governor Kasich is.
Thanks, Sam, for that call. Regarding the oil and gas tax, it's called a severance tax, and the governor worked hard to get it increased a lot more than the legislature ended up giving him. What do you make of the severance tax? Do you think it's something that is viable, or were you opposed to that?
Well, I am for a severance tax, but I disagreed with the governor's tax increase proposal. Number one, I thought he was breaking his promise when he said he wasn't going to raise taxes. I think he's broken that promise a number of times. But that was one glaring example of it. The other problem that I had with his proposal was it's not taking the money and investing in the community where that drilling activity is taking place. If you go into the eastern part of the state, which is, as I think you probably know, we were talking before we started that you covered Appalachia, this is their chance to actually have significant investment in their local economies. They are hurting there. There are counties in some parts of the state that still have double-digit unemployment. And for the state to come along and say, well, we're going to tax this local natural resource, and we're going to keep almost all the money for the state budget, which, by the way, is dramatically bigger than it was under Governor Kasich's predecessor, and we're going to keep it for ourselves, for our own budgetary priorities, without sitting down with local folks out there and saying, here's how we can invest in the local community, I think is wrong. So I think the whole premise of it was headed in the wrong direction.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Ed Fitzgerald. He's a Democratic nominee for governor. You've proposed a plan to help families save for college. What mm-hmm. do you propose to reduce the cost of higher education in Ohio so that families don't have to save so much and or go into debt?
I think it's a two-pronged approach. I do think part of it is saving, and that's why in my county, we became the first county in America where every single child that starts kindergarten has a college savings account now. Now, that is dramatic, and it's going to make a big difference. And I'm talking about every single child that starts kindergarten will have a college savings account that the county ends up holding in trust for them. Now, they can either use that for college, they can use it for vocational or technical education. And that is important, and it also inspires a child to know that they have real potential. We've got to make sure that every child understands from a very early age that a high school education is really not going to be good enough in a 21st century economy. Now, the other thing that's happened in Ohio, and this predates Governor Kasich, although he hasn't done anything to do anything about it, is we do one of the worst jobs in the country in terms of providing need-based financial aid. And we cut those funds a long time ago, and we have never restored them. And instead of always giving tax cuts to the wealthiest people in the state, how about having a budgetary priority to say, let's finally put some of that money back so that if a family is a middle-class, working-class family, they don't have to go into tens of thousands of dollars of debt or put a second mortgage on the house in order for their child to go to college. Now, my wife and I are lucky. We're doing pretty well financially right now, but I'll have two kids in college in the fall, and we understand exactly how expensive college education can be. And unfortunately, even though it's becoming more and more of a necessity for people's career, it's becoming beyond the reach of the average family in Ohio.
Where do you stand on the issue of gay marriage in Ohio? Should it be managed, if you agree with it, should it be managed by the legislature, the courts, or by the ballot?
Well, the quickest way, first of all, I'm in favor of it. I believe in marriage equality, period. I believe in equality for people regardless of age, race, gender, sexual orientation, in housing, in employment, and in marriage. And I think we ought to embrace that as a country, and I think we ought to embrace it as a state. And the quickest way for us to get there would be for the legislature to do the right thing and take action on it. If they won't do it, then I suppose eventually it will have to go to the legislature, or I'm sorry, to the ballot. Now, I mean, I don't oppose the courts doing it, but I think that it's a sad statement that federal courts are having to basically vindicate people's rights in Ohio that are being violated by state officials. Perfect example is what happened with voting rights. I certainly was encouraged by the federal court's ruling about preserving voting rights that had been restricted by Governor Kasich and by John Husted, but I wish they hadn't had to do it. So if they have to do that when it comes to marriage equality, so be it. But I would rather that it's something that our elected representatives actually embrace as something that is positive for the future of our state.
Let's talk a little politics now. You mentioned that I mentioned earlier that you're behind in campaign fundraising by a lot. That includes support from statewide and national Democratic organizations. What are your expectations going forward when it comes to support from your party from the top down?
Well, my expectation is that I'm going to have the funds to be able to tell the other side of the story. I mean, what a lot of polls actually show, if you dig into the weeds of the poll, is that people don't agree with the path that Governor Kasich has been pushing us on. And if we have the opportunity to tell the other side of the story, we can be successful in the election. And that's been my history as somebody that's run for office before. So when I ran for city council, I was outspent. When I ran for mayor, I was outspent. When I ran for county executive, I was outspent dramatically by a couple $1 million, even in one county. And my experience in life has been that having a lot of money is a nice thing, but it's not the only thing. And if people agree with you on the issues, that's a very powerful thing. And I think we're going to raise enough money that we'll be able to tell our side of the story, and that's why I think we're going to prevail.
You're out on radio now, I know. What about television? When do you expect? Is that going to be something more closer to the fall, or are you planning on something this summer that people can look forward to seeing?
Well, I don't know if people look forward to ever seeing television advertising, but maybe some point. I don't want to say when it's going to start, but it will start in time. Like I said, we have that's just not something I really talk about publicly, exactly when direct mail starts or when yard signs start or when billboards start or radio or television. But you will see it. Be patient.
Ed Fitzgerald, I wait with bated breath. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Hope to come back sometime.
Ed Fitzgerald, he's the Democratic nominee for governor. Coming up, we'll continue our politics discussion with political scientist John Green. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. I just concluded an interview with Democratic gubernatorial candidate Ed Fitzgerald. He's the Cuyahoga County executive who is challenging a much better funded and well-known incumbent Republican John Kasich for the job. If you missed that interview and would like to hear it, you can tune in tonight at 7 p.m. when it re-airs, or check out the archive on our website at wosu.org/allsides. We have many times over the last few years sought an interview with Governor John Kasich. We'll continue to seek that interview. So we wait with bated breath for that as well. Joining me now to talk about the nature of gubernatorial politics in the Buckeye State is University of Akron political scientist John Green. He is the director of the Bliss Institute of Applied Politics. Welcome back, John.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
A federal judge has ordered that Ohio restore the last 3 days of early voting. The judge ordered Ohio Secretary of State John Husted to set uniform and suitable in-person early voting hours for the 3 days preceding all future elections. That's good for Democrats because there are more of them in Ohio, but they usually aren't very successful at getting out the vote on an off-year election. Do you expect that to be the case this year? Is there anything that might inspire them?
Well, you know, I think that the more early voting you have, the easier it is to get what scholars call marginal voters, that is to say, the people that don't vote regularly, to get out to vote. And so, you know, all of the things being equal, I think that this change in the rules is likely to help the Democrats. But, of course, there's so many other factors involved mm-hmm. here. As you know, right now, the economy is a huge issue here in Ohio. Things have been going a little better recently, but who knows if that's going to last. And, you know, President Obama's popularity is down a little bit. This often happens in the second term of presidents. You know, that might discourage a few voters. I mean, it's hard to tell. The point being that what really drives people to the polls is their interest in the election and their excitement. And it's a little too early to tell what that might be. But if everybody's equally excited, making it easier to vote does lead people to come out and vote in larger numbers.
Did the Democrats or should the Democrats have learned anything from the defeat of an incumbent Democrat Governor Ted Strickland 4 years ago?
You know, I think one of the big problems with Governor Strickland's loss, which was a very close election.
Two percentage points, right?
Yeah, this thing was very close. And up until, you know, even election night, it looked like Governor Strickland might pull it out. Mm-hmm. But the analysis afterwards suggested that there was a turnout problem on the Democratic side, particularly with African-Americans, younger people, union members, you know, these key Democratic blocks. And so all other things taken aside, it's extremely important for Democrats to get those key constituencies mobilized this year, or else they might have some of the same troubles as in 2010.
My guest, once again, is John Green, director of the Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ed Fitzgerald has had a hard time. I don't know if it's a hard time raising money so much, but he's down by more than $9 million compared to his competition. It's a big shortfall has been in the national political arena. He's not getting a lot of money from across the country. What does it take to be considered important at the national level?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with poll numbers. And, you know, up until recently, the polls have showed the gubernatorial race to be very, very tight. But in the last couple of polls, Governor Kasich has moved out ahead. See, part of the problem that a Democratic candidate has in this environment is there are lots and lots of competitive Democratic races around the country, particularly in Senate races. And so it may be that a lot of the national money is putting more attention to some of those races rather than to Ohio. Now, as Ohioans, of course, this seems weird because we're always at the center of attention, and this race may ultimately become so. But, you know, to get on the radar screen of national funders, we'll have to see some change in the poll numbers, I think.
John Kasich's been able to start the ball rolling with a significant positive campaign put forth by the Republican Governors Association. That's given him a great opportunity to rebrand.
Yeah, it really has. You know, Governor Kasich won by a very small margin. He's a very policy-oriented governor. Some of his initial policy innovations were not that popular, but his popularity has recovered a bit. But the assistance of the Republican Governors Association has been very valuable to him to be able to run big positive spots, some of them on television a minute long, you know, which seems like eternity when you're watching mm-hmm. television. I think that's really been to his benefit. You know, the parties are not evenly matched. And, you know, if you look at the senatorial campaign, the Democrats do seem to have, at the national level, some advantage over the Republicans, even though a lot of races are tight. But, you know, in the gubernatorial area, the Republicans have an advantage over the Democrats. We saw it in 2010, and we're seeing it this year. And that extra money can be a big help because it can be run outside of the campaign that of the gubernatorial candidates themselves.
Dave and Baxley are on the air with John Green. Hi, Dave.
Hi. It seems like there's no limits to what you can give. One person could fund the governor's race. It seems like campaign finance reform is just forgotten. I'd like to see that reform initiated, and I don't know. The Republicans have no incentive to do that. What's your opinion?
Well, you know, I think there was a huge change just a couple of years ago when the U.S. Supreme Court issued its Citizens United decision, which basically said that corporate groups, business corporations, labor unions, cooperatives, and so forth, could spend unlimited amounts in campaigns advocating their point of view. Now, I suppose from a strictly legal point of view, there's a difference between an outside group spending an unlimited amount of money and the candidates spending a limited amount of money. Mm-hmm. But the to the average voter who's watching this on television or listening to it on radio, it all kind of sounds the same. So I think you make a really good point. Because of the Citizens United decision, there really is an avenue for a lot of money to flow into campaigns, whether it's national campaigns or state campaigns. And a lot of the limits that, by the way, are still in place, don't seem to have the kind of impact they used to have, because there's this way to have truly massive amounts of spending if, of course, that money can be raised. And wealthy individuals and corporate groups are generally in the position to raise that kind of money.
Thanks, Dave. If anyone else has a question or comment for John Green, the number is 614-292-8513. They can spend an unlimited amount of money, but they can't coordinate with the campaign, right?
Yeah, and that's really a key point here, that the expenditures, according to the Supreme Court, have to be independent. And what that means is that there cannot be direct communication or coordination with the candidates. Now, this is a little bit different than party spending. Political parties can coordinate with their candidates, but of course there are some limits on what parties and candidates can spend. One of the really interesting questions is, how do you establish independence? From the point of view of a lot of our fellow citizens, the most common way to establish independence is very irritating, and that is that the outside groups only spend money on negative ads. In other words, they don't support the candidate they're for, they attack the candidate they're against. Mm-hmm. The argument being that it's easier to establish independence. You know, some people are a little bit skeptical that these independence efforts are really independent of the candidates.
What do you think would or could excite voters to get out to the polls in November? Let's say the Democrats. What could Ed Fitzgerald do? He doesn't have the money, so he's not going to get on television, at least at this point in the game. He's not going to, as much as his competitor, John Kasich. Could there be external forces at play that would get people excited about who's governor of the state of Ohio?
Oh, there certainly could be. You know, politics is so unpredictable. Mm-hmm. If you look back at the past several gubernatorial campaigns in Ohio, even though this is a very competitive state and is always regarded as a battleground state, we've had big Democratic wins, we've had big Republican wins, and a lot of that had to do with outside forces. So for instance, no one can really predict what's going to happen with the economy. There's always the possibility of a scandal, either at the national level or the state level. There's always possibilities that candidates will make big mistakes and say things that really discourage their supporters and energize the other side. And then, of course, as we just mentioned from the comment from the previous caller, there is a possibility that if something starts to move politically in Ohio for any of those reasons, that truly large sums of money could come into the state very, very quickly, aiding the candidate that has in a position to take advantage of that circumstance. So, you know, if all things stayed the same, politics would be a lot less interesting. So there are a lot of things that could happen between now and November, and many of them honestly unpredictable, because we just don't know what's happening in the future.
In Columbus, there was a big levy campaign for the zoo. You might have heard about it. But in any event, a Koch brothers-funded organization got involved at the local level and was funding efforts to defeat the zoo levy. Governor Kasich went out to Las Vegas to meet a big billionaire casino owner a few months ago. Does connection with those big money individuals and those entities, is that something that can hurt someone like John Kasich, or would Ed Fitzgerald be happy to do it himself if someone invited him?
Well, that's a really interesting question. You know, I've talked to a lot of candidates on both sides that really don't like the money chase but will often say, you know, but you need to do what you have to do, and oftentimes you. I mean, I don't know anybody that's taken money that they clearly didn't want to be associated with, but oftentimes they're in gray areas and there's potential controversies. Campaigns cost so much these days that it's almost inevitable that candidates will find themselves in, you know, potentially difficult circumstances because they might be held accountable for the views and the activities of the people and groups that have donated to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's just the fact that a large donor gave money to a candidate that becomes an issue. There always has to be something else, some unpopular position, something like the Columbus Zoo levy that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Which didn't seem to make a difference, right?
Yeah, that can make a difference because then money, big money, is then connected with something that people understand and may feel very negatively mm-hmm. about. So that's the danger that I think all candidates have with big donations is that it'll become a controversy because of something else unrelated to the donation itself.
Can you win the state of Ohio and not be competitive with the other side in terms of money? With seven major media markets, it just costs a lot of money to get on the air.
Well, you know, the candidates don't have to spend the same amount. We do have some examples of candidates that spent less but nonetheless won.
Mm-hmm.
The key thing is, can the candidate spend enough to get his or her message across? So, you know, it's not that we have to have even dollars, although oftentimes in Ohio we do tend to have pretty even dollars. But the real challenge is to get enough money. And with seven media markets, a very diverse state, you can't just use television. You got to use radio, direct mail. Mm-hmm. These days, the internet, Twitter, Facebook. I mean, all this costs money. And so, for instance, to just take the example of Ed Fitzgerald, he doesn't have to spend exactly the same amount as John Kasich by any means. If he has enough to get his message across, and the situation that Mr. Fitzgerald in is very common for challengers to incumbents. If there's somebody with a great resume, but who is just not known very well outside of their part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a minimum amount of advertising to get that name out.
It seems like we're always teetering between two things. On one side, you know, say on the Republican side, a dearth of candidates at the national level, but there's plenty of candidates at the state level, or a dearth of candidates at the Democrat at the state level for Democrats, and plenty to pick from at the federal level. Have you looked at those? I use the word teetering, but I guess it's more like a pendulum type of thing. Why that happens the way it does?
Yeah, we've looked at that a good bit, and you know, it happens a little bit differently in different places.
Mm-hmm.
And the national level, of course, it's a sum of all the different states. But one of the things that happens in Ohio is that when one party has a lot of success, whether it's the Democrats or Republicans, and maybe wins lots of offices, they tend to discourage the development of the future candidates in their party. I don't think that's necessarily on purpose. It's just the way it works. And the out party is the one that begins to groom the candidates. And a lot of the ambitious people who would like to be in state government go to that side.
Mm-hmm.
And then that side wins. And then the cycle repeats itself. So we don't oftentimes have evenly matched parties in terms of candidate quality. Because the people who've done well are, in a sense, not developing the farm team.
Hmm.
Whereas the people who are out of power, they're developing the farm team. So it is really interesting that we get these swings of pendulums from one party to another.
When I started covering state government and politics, it was the Vern Reif era. He was the Speaker of the House. He'd been the Speaker of the House for something like 20 years. Now there's term limits. Democrats controlled the House. Republicans have been controlling the Senate for a long time, for about 25 years now. What do you make of the impact of term limits on the farm team development?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people thought that term limits would encourage the development of farm team.
Right.
And overall, I don't think it really has. And here's why. If I'm thinking about running, say, for the state legislature, but I know that my opponent is going to have to leave office because of term limits in a few years, I just wait. Instead of getting my organization together, you know, mm-hmm. testing the waters, learning how to campaign. And so, ironically, one of the great prospects of term limits in the minds of its supporters really hasn't come to pass. We really haven't. So it really has really more to do with which party's in power. And, of course, because of term limits, that shifts regularly.
Ed Fitzgerald, at least during my interview, and I haven't heard a lot of him harping on the Senate Bill 5 issue. That is the law put forth by Governor Kasich, and it was passed by the legislature that banned collective bargaining for public employees. It was subsequently defeated at the ballot by the voters in issue 2. But it does stand as a, if you, you know, look at it from the point of view of a lot of Democrats in Ohio, a stain on the record of Governor Kasich. Do you think that's going to stand the test of time, or has time enough passed and he has not brought it up again that he'll be okay in that regard?
You know, I think in terms of voters, time has passed and it's not as vivid in their mind. And I think the fact that Governor Kasich and the Republicans took their defeat and didn't try to reinstitute that measure by other means, which some people have talked about them maybe doing, I think that has caused this to become a second or third tier issue for voters. Now, many of the people who oppose that bill, particularly people in the labor movement and public employees, have certainly not forgotten. So they're in a position to try to revive interest in that issue among the general public. But it will take some effort because that was a few years ago. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we've moved on to other controversies and other concerns.
So much of the issues that are in the public's mind right now are happening in the courts. Whether it's the Hobby Lobby case or particularly marriage equality, how much do you think that comes into play in the conversations in a gubernatorial race in a state like Ohio?
You know, for the most part, those types of issues, social issues, environmental issues, for example, you know, things like same-sex marriage and religious free exercise, these are very important issues to the base constituencies of both parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. And, you know, we've seen plenty of examples of Supreme Court or even state court decisions that mobilize particular groups who are very intense about those particular issues. And so, particularly in a close election, these issues can end up mattering because they help mobilize turnout for one side or the other. Most people are not that concerned about these issues. It's not that they don't have opinions. They're much more focused on the economy. And so if the economy is struggling, or, and of course, even if the economy is not struggling, some individuals may be struggling. That's really where the gubernatorial elections tend to be fought. But that isn't to say that these other issues can't matter. The closer it gets, the more these court-inspired issues can become relevant.
Not coincidentally, 4 years ago, Ohio was in the dregs economically.
Exactly. And I think that was a big issue in that campaign. And even though Governor Strickland almost pulled it out, it's clear that the weight of the economy was very difficult for him. In that situation, Governor Kasich, at least as of today, faces a little better situation. The economy has improved a bit, but it's by no means perfect. And I think there's some real opportunities for Mr. Fitzgerald to point out some of those shortcomings and offer some new solutions.
He said that the governor's using the wrong numbers to measure. He said that the unemployment rate's not in and of itself wrong, but it's out of context. Is that getting too complicated for voters?
You know, that kind of argument, I don't know if that particular comment is, but it can get very complicated for voters because, you know, a lot of the measurement of the economy is fairly arcane. I must admit it confuses me sometimes. And what people really react to is what's happening in their lives. You know, do they have jobs? Can their kids get jobs? Can they pay their bills? And, you know, the recovery here in Ohio has been very uneven. You know, certainly there are some people who feel that things are better, but there are other people who feel that, you know, things just haven't changed at all. So, you know, I think there's some opportunity for both sides to talk about the aspects of the economy that benefit them.
What other issues do you think voters should be paying attention to? Or do you think that they will pay attention to? Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, there's always the danger that, you know, some national issues will sweep into Ohio. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but our governors can't do a whole lot with that. If you, for instance, think of some of the controversies with the Veterans Administration or some of the issues with climate change. I mean, these are things that are really happening at the national level, but, you know, they could impact our voters here in Ohio. Governors don't have a lot to do with those issues, a little bit. But I suspect that the one issue that Ohioans might do well to pay a lot of attention to is the issue of oil and gas exploration.
Okay.
You know, there's some real potentially positive thing out of, I guess, what people call fracking, you know, the oil and natural gas exploration. But there's also the danger of some environmental problems, either directly with the wells or indirectly in terms of hydrocarbons being put into the atmosphere. That issue hasn't become a frontier issue yet, but I think there's the potential that it could. because it's an issue that could touch a lot of people's lives.
John Green, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
John Green, he's a director of the Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. Once again, if you want to hear my interview with Ed Fitzgerald, the Democratic nominee for governor of the state of Ohio, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides and check out our archives or listen tonight at 7 p.m. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.